Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
This is Pam Shriver.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, hello everyone, and welcome to your day three Australian Open tennis podcast, coming to you from Tennis Podcast Towers Melbourne at 10 to 1 in the morning. We are here. Tennis, of course, is still being played, and unfortunately, David Law is detained commentating on one of the three matches that are still on court at Melbourne Park. As of about 9:30 p.m., Matt, there were 10 scheduled matches that hadn't even started. It's been quite a day.
It has. I think it's extra weird when it's rainy at the Australian Open compared to the other Grand Slams. You sort of expect it at the other Slams. I mean, I know that we expect changeable weather when we come to Melbourne, but even so, it's weird when it's rainy here because, you know, it's great they have three roofs. I think we're going with that now as the plural of roof. So tennis can continue. But so many of the matches just have not been able to get going. They had to cancel all the doubles today, which was meant to start. And we got to sort of early evening and suddenly there was just an avalanche of matches coming our way on the outside courts. And we were sitting among the British press pack who were anxiously waiting to see whether Cameron Norrie would remain on the schedule or be bumped over to tomorrow, perhaps. And I don't know whether it's good news or bad news, but the news came that he was moving to court 13, I think, and was on the schedule today. And a lot of British journalists were therefore here for the night, David among them.
Yeah, he is commentating on Cam Norrie and a man who he describes as a mad genius, Constantin Lestienne. Mad genius that's apparently been driving Cam Norrie absolutely bananas. He is currently 2-1 up, though, is Cam Norrie. So good luck, David. By the time he hears this, hopefully it'll all be a distant memory. But goodness me, tennis is absolutely ridiculous. It is not even going to be remarkable that the three matches are going on at this time of night, and goodness knows what time they'll finish. I mean, that is just tennis all over. It, exactly as you say, Matt, it had the feeling today of a day that would be a little bit weird, that maybe would feature some upsets. And I think that's just because overcast, drizzly, cold weather does not suit Australia. Something weird was in the air from the very start, and we have had some drama, we've had some upsets. We're going to talk about that, get into all of it in just a moment's time. But first, a little bit of exciting sort of additional news. You'll know by now, of course, if you've been listening to us this week, that the Tennis Podcast during the Australian Open is sponsored by On Location, the premium hospitality and experience provider. They are bringing us to the BNP Paribas Open in Indian Wells for the first time all together in March. And you'll also know that we have a 5% discount code on offer to all friends of the Tennis Podcast. on Steve Fergal's international tennis tours throughout the 2023 tennis season. We also, though, have some additional exciting news for any of you that are in the UK or US, residents of either of those countries. On Location has given us one of Steve Fergal's international tennis tours packages to the Miami Open, presented by Itau and described by me yesterday as the back end of the Sunshine Double Donkey. And I stand by it. It's a beautiful donkey. That package is to be given away to one lucky Tennis Podcast newsletter subscriber. The winning newsletter subscriber, drawn at random from those that enter, will win the following: a 3-night stay at the official Miami Open Tournament Hotel for two guests. And you get to, you know, see tennis players generally at those hotels. I hate that. But
that would be appealing for some people.
It would be very appealing for some people. There's nothing worse than seeing like Talon Greeks poor at breakfast. But for some people, that will be a hoot. Tickets to 2 days and two night sessions of matches at the Miami Open, and premium hospitality inclusive of food, beer and wine. And I really do appreciate the specificity in that aspect of the package. And you get daily round trip transportation via the tournament's official shuttle service. And you see all sorts on the shuttles. Umpires, line judges, it's all good fun. So if you're a US or UK resident, a Tennis Podcast newsletter subscriber — it doesn't cost anything to be a newsletter subscriber, by the way. The link is in our show notes. It's an absolute no-brainer to subscribe. And if you can get yourself to Miami, you'll be eligible to enter this incredible draw, courtesy of On Location. The draw will run until the conclusion of the Australian Open, and then the winner announced the following week. So to enter, just go to tours4tennis.com/podcast. That's tours4tennis.com/podcast. Now to the tennis. And we have to lead with the early exit, the second round exit of the defending champion Rafael Nadal at the hands of the American Mackenzie McDonald. Straight set 6-4, 6-4, 7-5. There were a few different chapters to this match. An absolutely electric start for Mackenzie McDonald. He was winning fair and square. It was a tactical masterclass from him. He really pushed Nadal into his forehand corner. That turned out to be a really, really good strategy. But then in the eighth game of the second set, Nadal pulls up sharply. He's hunched over. He's grimacing. You know instantly with Nadal when something is seriously wrong. And he then takes an off-court medical timeout. And when he returns to the court, he is an absolute shadow of himself. He can barely move. He can barely serve. He's clearly intent on finishing the match, and plays about as well as a wounded animal possibly can play tennis for a set and a half. But it's obviously never going to be enough. You've got so many harrowing shots of Nadal staring into the abyss at changeovers, contemplating his sporting mortality at those sit-downs, his support team in tears. And then at the end of the match, the absolutely haunting sight of Nadal's funeral march to the locker room, a slow, slow trudge, followed by the camera all the way. It was incredibly poignant, Matt. And I don't know if we want to get into all of the will he be back at the Australian Open. How poignant is it? Will, you know, was that a farewell to the crowd? You know, that moment he took to wave goodbye. I don't know if we want to get into all of that, but it felt incredibly poignant.
Mm, for sure. And to be honest, I'm not sure we can get into all that meaningfully, because I think the theme of this injury that Nadal's got here is that he really doesn't know how serious it is. You know, it was bad enough in the moment to cause him a huge amount of pain and to make it impossible for him to win that match. But it really struck me that when Nadal had his foot issue at Roland Garros, and let's be honest, that was pretty much the most career-threatening injury that Nadal's ever had. You know, his career was in the balance there. But there was real certainty about what he knew his options were. You know, it was to have the treatment and it either works or it doesn't. It was pretty black and white. And I think in a way that was kind of easier to accept. You know, he knew the situation he was in. This is an issue now where he's just frequently piling up injury after injury. And you have to start to wonder whether he can still take it, you know, to constantly be in recovery mode and coming back. You know, he's not getting younger, of course. He's you know, we know that he's close to the end of his career, and the question is how close. And the more injuries like this happen, you have to suspect that as much motivation and determination and love for the sport that he still has, it's going to get harder and harder to keep coming back. And that was kind of what he was saying in his press conference. He used the words mentally destroyed, didn't he, to sort of describe how he was feeling, because he'd had a really good practice and this is sort of not come out of nowhere. He said he had been feeling it a bit, but absolutely he didn't expect it to disrupt his tournament. And yeah, it's just another injury setback. And we've been talking about those pretty much constantly with Nadal since the French Open last year. You know, he just can't stay fit for a long period of time. And that is really, really taking its toll now on him.
And he really veered in that post-match press conference between, you know, just saying, I'm going to fight to be back and rinse every last bit out of my career that I possibly can, because that's all I know how to do and that's all I want to do. You know, he's asked at the end, what's your motivation for continuing to put yourself through what's required just to continue to be a professional athlete? And he said, I love this. And I know he's been asked that question a million times and he's told us a million times, but I still think it was valid to ask it and to be reminded by Nadal of... I can hear him answer that question to the end of time, just say, I love doing this so much. There is nothing else I want to be doing, and there is nothing I'm not prepared to do to feel like I've got every last drop out of my career. Except is there a limit to what he's prepared to do? Is there a difference between, you know, a 2 month period on the sidelines followed by, you know, a 2 month period of rehab, and a 6 month period on the sidelines followed by longer rehab and longer trying to get match practice? I don't think Nadal's love for and commitment to the sport has wavered one bit. I don't think it's in his makeup for that ever to happen. I do just wonder if the balance of the equation has shifted a little bit in his mind.
Mm. Yeah, I think that's very possible. Also, his life circumstances have changed. He's a father now, and he spoke, I think it was after his first round, wasn't it, about how he didn't really know how he would feel if he had to be away from his son for a month, you know, and he was happy that he didn't have to be because his son has come with him here. But that is going to be factored into decisions that he makes now over the, you know, over the course of what's left of his career. So I don't think we can necessarily judge Nadal by how we've always judged him in the past. You know, we know his motivation will never waver, as you said, his love for it will never waver, but his body and just his life might tell him something different soon. And I don't know, there was something, you know, to go back to your word earlier, there was something poignant about the fact that here we are again with Nadal in Melbourne having an injury problem, because that has been the story really of his time at the Australian Open. I know he's won it twice, but he's also had an awful lot of pain here, you know, having to retire in big matches or having to miss the tournament altogether or being really compromised in matches, even if he didn't have to retire like today. And it sort of felt like he'd put all that behind him last year when he won the title here. You know, he just got this perfect moment, this miracle, and it was it was kind of like Melbourne was making it all up to him. You know, all the pain that it had cost him in the past, it didn't matter because he had this incredible moment. And yet, it's a sort of, you know, the tennis wheel just keeps turning. And here we are 12 months later, and kind of last year is the past, it's gone, and it's this year again, and Nadal's back in Melbourne hurting again. And
tennis moves like that.
Yeah, let's click our fingers.
It's the circus of life.
The circus of life, exactly. I did find it very, very poignant and moving for those reasons.
I don't want to never sit in an Australian Open press conference hearing Nadal talk about the circus of life again. I can't. Not to make it all about us, but I can't contemplate that possibility. So maybe let's not go too deep down the rabbit hole. As you say, it's legit not to go too deep down it because it's such an unknown. He hasn't had any scans yet. He doesn't know what he's dealing with. He said, his wording was, I have a history in the hip with injuries. I feel you, Rafa. but was never this amount of problem before. And it's interesting, you know, he was asked, I think because of what happened at Wimbledon last year, where he played through that what turned out to be a sort of 2 meter tear to his abdominal muscle when he would refuse to make eye contact with anybody in his box because they were all imploring him to retire in that quarterfinal match, against Taylor Fritz. He was asked whether anybody in his box this time around was he imploring him to retire, and he said, "I didn't ask. I'm old enough to make my own decisions." And he made it very clear that he was not going to retire from that match. He was going to put himself through whatever he needed to not retire as the defending champion. He referenced that, didn't he, as a factor in his decision-making today. And I don't know if that's a good example to be setting necessarily, you know, play through injury, potentially worsen your injury in order not to be the person that retires, because, you know, sometimes there's no shame in retiring.
For sure.
and admitting your limits. But Nadal is so unique and such a one-off, I do think, there was something wonderful in how he explained the importance of to him of not ending that way. And maybe it was in the back of his mind that if this is the last one, if doesn't exist.
He said, "I don't like that word."
He doesn't. But if it is the last one, he didn't want it to be that way. And I'm glad he was able to finish the match appropriately.
Yeah. And a word for Mackenzie McDonald, I think, as well, because as you said, he was playing a hell of a match. You know, he was beating Nadal before the injury happened. He was a set and a break up on him. He had his tactics spot on, as you said. The roof was on, and it just seemed that the ball was really skidding through. You know, he's got these quite short take backs on his ground strokes and hits the ball very, very flat. And he was executing perfectly. You know, it was the best I've seen him play, really. And he was holding it together, and he was just holding the court so well. You know, he was in charge. He was dictating. And I didn't expect that, to be honest. I thought that this would be a really good matchup for Nadal against a guy with not many weapons. But he sort of made the absolute most of what he had because he was so good tactically, I think.
Absolutely. And then when it became a completely different match in the third set, dealt and pivoted and dealt with that brilliantly as well. I tell you what, that situation with Nadal playing as a wounded animal, but he was unable to hit backhands, basically. Just could not hit that shot. The serve was Whittaker-esque. But he was sort of just teeing off on the forehand with this loose left arms, firing off the most improbable winners, and occasionally sort of marauding, limping to the net and hitting volley winners. Tell you what, that would have got in the head of a lot of players. And Mackenzie McDonald did so well to maintain his intensity and just focus on himself and not worry about being the bad guy. He was He was very impressive. Do we have to interrupt this broadcast? I was going to continue with the men's draw, seeing as we were on it. But I think we might need to interrupt this broadcast with live, soon-to-be-out-of-date tennis news, which is that not only is there a deciding set tiebreak happening before our eyes at 1:09 a.m., but I think we also just had the holy grail of a player celebrating reaching 7 points in the tiebreak, only to realise...
Did we?
I think that's what just happened to Danielle Collins. And it's now an awful lot closer than it was when she thought she'd won the match. Yeah.
Oh, I want to see Collins's face when she was told that she hadn't won the match.
Well,
because
she
always gives good face. I know it wouldn't have disappointed.
She had both arms aloft. It was it was extraordinary. It's now 8-5 in the tiebreak. We'll keep you posted on that soon to be added date tennis news. But let's stay with the men's draw. I want to talk about Felix Auger-Aliassime because he was getting himself in a pickle at the same time that Nadal things were happening on Rod Laver Arena. That there wasn't much tennis happening at that time because it was all rained off on the outside courts, and yet still there was too much tennis.
Yes,
to be able to focus the necessary attention.
Yes, and it was all really bad news for Tony Nadal for about an hour there, because Rafael Nadal was losing and eventually being, you know, taken out of the tournament, and Felix Auger-Aliassime, who he of course coaches, was two sets down. And it was weird because it was indoors. And we've been saying sort of for so long that, gosh, it would be great for Auger-Aliassime if he could play an indoor Grand Slam, because we saw what he did at the end of last season. He really thrived in those conditions. And yet today, in the first two sets, he was erratic and error prone. And I think the problem is that he didn't actually, to my eyes anyway, change his game in that match to make a difference. Even though he won it, I ended up really sort of realizing that there's actually not that much of a plan B there, you know, and plan A wasn't working. So you hope to go to plan B for most players, I think. But what he actually did was hope and wait for plan A to start working. And it did, because he was really good in those last three sets. He tightened up his game, cut out the errors. But it made me think, what if he's in this situation again and he can't get plan A working? That made me worry a little bit. It was great that he found it, but I did just think,
I feel like the plan B for him, certainly in Grand Slams, which are best of five, is I'm fit enough that I can stay out here. So if I can just stay out here, hopefully it'll start happening for me. Rely on the fitness. It's obviously brilliant that he is that fit, and he doesn't have to worry about that as an element. And, you know, he was able to hang tough and was out there long enough for things to turn around. But he felt like a passenger in things turning around a little bit. He didn't feel like he got that match by the scruff of the neck and said, you know, not today.
No, he just started playing a bit better.
Yeah.
He doesn't have the flexibility in his game.
This sounds like a little bit of a shift for you in Felix Auger-Aliassime. You've always been... I find your stance on him really fascinating because you're such a believer. And you're absolutely not alone in that. And I'm not totally not a believer. I'm not writing him off. I just have a lot more doubts than you do, a lot more questions that he's yet to answer for me. But this sounds like a slight shift. Well, because he was troubled in the first round, wasn't he? He was in a pickle against Vasek Pospisil.
Yeah, and I suppose I just took that as, you know, good that he's winning when he's not playing well. And I don't think he actually ever really found his top level in that match.
Maybe he heard our praise for that and thought, oh, I'll keep doing that.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess I'm starting to think that he needs to play his best tennis in every match, really, to win this tournament from now on.
He's not a fan of the balls, is he?
No, he's not. He was really annoyed about them.
And really wants to talk about it. Some people are like, you know, Nadal obviously hates the balls, but he'll sort of say, I've said, you know, I don't want to be the guy that's going out there slagging off the balls and by extension slagging off the tournament. Don't worry, Rafa. Felix is happy to be that guy. He doesn't like him at all.
No, he was really annoyed about how they weren't bouncing up. Mm. And he said he kind of has to change the natural arc of his shots because of that, because he likes it bouncing up. He likes putting a lot of spin on the ball. But as we've been hearing, you know, after a couple of games, they're just not taking spin, these balls. And that is really affecting him. He said it was worse today than the first round, I think, because it was indoors. So... maybe that takes away our indoor theory about him. I don't know. I'm a little bit sort of lost on what to think about Ogier Aliassime. I'm still a believer. He's going all the way to the final in my predictions. I just think he needs to start playing better. But given his dislike for the balls, given what we've seen in the first couple of rounds, I'm a little worried. But, you know, if he can find that top level... I still think he can reach the final here.
Yeah, not looking like a title contender yet. Francis Tiafoe, though, Matt Roberts. Is it time we start thinking about Francis Tiafoe as in the little mix? There's a mix of one. That's what we've decided on. We haven't seen enough of Djokovic looking injured or anything other than a 9-time champion, I don't think, to revise that. But in terms of the little mix, the other contenders, is it time we start putting Francis Tiafoe in there? Another straight sets win for him over the 17-year-old Jerry Sheng. And the draw opening up a little bit now with Nadal out. Although, P.S., he's proven he can beat Nadal in Grand Slams.
Yeah, that's true. And he said in his press conference that he was talking to Mackenzie McDonald before and sort of pumping him up and saying, look, you can do it. You know, I've done it recently. And Tommy Paul had a win over Nadal recently. Taylor Fritz. There's been a real sort of surge of Americans doing well against Rafael Nadal. And so Tiafoe, I'm sure, was pleased for Mackenzie McDonald. But he did also say he quite fancied, you know, another go at Nadal to sort of prove that he could do it again. And
I just love that attitude that he's got now.
And he spoke so brilliantly about how a few years ago he just wasn't working hard enough. You know, he said that was why his ranking dropped. That was why he didn't make that much progress. And, you know, it's not rocket science. You know, you've got to work hard in order to improve. And he said that in the last couple of years, something has really clicked for him and he is working hard. He's so motivated and hungry now. And we said it the other day, I love how there's been that shift in him and he is, I think, worthy of being in the little mix. And yet he's lost none of what always made him so compelling. You know, he's still brilliant to watch. He's still a great interview. He still brings the vibes. And those two things together, you know, a real contender, but also fun.
Magic concoction.
Is just perfect, isn't it? And I think he's played well in Australia before. That was sort of where he had his Grand Slam breakthrough. He got to the quarters here, didn't he? And I think he likes the conditions. So absolutely, I think he's a real contender to still be here, you know, sort of this time next week, perhaps.
And doing it all in a sort of tropical mankini. Incredible. Other significant men's results today. Daniil Medvedev beat the Australian sensation, or one of many Australian sensations, according to Australian media, John Millman, tonight. Matt went to his press conferences. It's good to be back in Daniil Medvedev Australian Open press conferences, isn't it? And I'm going to do a little tease here, Matt.
Mm.
Because if
David would be proud.
If the on location competition was an incentive enough to sign up to the newsletter and Matt Stat and all the other brilliant jazz that's offered in the newsletter, we're going to put the contents of Matt's exchange with Daniil Medvedev in our daily newsletter that will be going out later on tonight, our time, tomorrow, your time, yesterday, someone else's time, sometime soon. probably by the time you're listening to this, you'll have the newsletter. So it's well worth subscribing to. I've seen the quotes. If you're interested in Daniil Medvedev just being interesting and self-aware and cool, then highly recommend. Stefanos Tsitsipas took about 12 minutes to beat Rinki Hijikata. Tonight on the Rod Laver Arena, Yannick Sinner straight sets.
They're on a collision course, aren't they? Sinner and Tsitsipas.
For in the fourth round, I think I do think that match is going to happen.
Yeah, and it happened last year, didn't it? In the quarters, and
was disappointing. Tsitsipas
blew him away. Yeah. That was a really maybe the best match Tsitsipas played all year. I don't know. I'm probably forgetting one or two, but he was brilliant in that match. He just jumped all over Sinner, and I'd be fascinated to know, sort of 12 months on, what can change for Sinner. But just on Medvedev, I won't give away the exchange I had with him in the press conference, but I did enjoy the line he gave on the court, where, you know, he was talking about playing John Millman, and they were very grueling rallies, and he just sort of gave this really ominous line, but said it in a really sort of light-hearted way, that his strategy was basically, okay, let's just play 40 shot rallies then and see if you can beat me. And that kind of is his thing, isn't it? You know, and if he's in that mode, if he's in that mood, like, it's going to be hard to beat Daniil Medvedev, I think. And again, talking about the conditions, they really seem to suit
flat
him.
Hitter.
Yeah. I mean, Medvedev is someone who I didn't have that much confidence in coming into this tournament, just because of the fact he didn't play very well against Djokovic in Adelaide. He's not been great, really, to be honest.
He's not had any off-season.
He's not had any off-season, but he seems to be playing really well. But Sebastian Korda, I believe, in the next round, also in form, he's not going to want 40-shot rallies with Daniil Medvedev. He's going to want to end them a lot sooner than that, I think. But whether he can or not, we'll see.
Very much here for that matchup, Korda against Medvedev. That'll be in a couple of days' time.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
On to the women's draw, headlined, I think, other than by Danielle Collins celebrating victory twice just now over Karolina Mukova. She has just got the job done, folks. And gosh, that match was brilliant, wasn't it? Just before we get on to Radu Coco, that match was so good and should have been played in front of a packed house at a time when everybody's able to watch, and unfortunately it reached its thrilling conclusion at 1:15 a.m. and absolutely nobody was watching. And blooming tennis.
Yeah. Blooming tennis. But
big win for
big win. That's
Danielle Collins
big,
and her one functioning knee.
Yes, that's two wins late in deciding sets. She's sort of soldiering on despite that injury that she seemed to pick up early in the first round. And I love this match because I feel like Mukova's game both disrupted Collins because it disrupts everyone. It's a gorgeous game, to be honest.
Really,
I really like watching her, so smooth. And yet also because, you know, she's not all power, Mukova, it did also allow Collins to occasionally just absolutely lean on a ball and leather it. You sort of got the best of both. You got a bit of disruption, but also kind of bringing out the best of Collins as well. It was a joy to watch.
She brought all the vibes. It's been a bit of a weird day, and I was just so thankful for the sight of Danielle Collins walking out onto a tennis court, just knowing she would bring some vibes.
Yeah.
She'd bring vibes to a wake with Danielle Collins. I mean, I hope she never has to, but she would if required. Right then, Radu Coco. Really, really trying to make that hashtag happen, Matt. I'm not only trying to make rivalries happen, I'm trying to
accompanying
make
hashtags.
Accompanying hashtags happen. I didn't come up with it. Hannah did on our Twitter, and it's brilliant. The match ended up brilliant, didn't it? It did not start brilliantly. There were a lot of people pointing to the stats of this match that don't make it look brilliant. There were a lot of unforced errors. The majority of them did come in the first set, and it took a while to hot up. It was really edgy and bitty and rhythmless in the opening set. There were a lot of errors from both players and in the first set, and I think overall it was experience that told for Coco Gauff, which is extraordinary because she's the younger
she's
player.
Younger.
She's 18 years old. No, she's 19. Was she 18?
She's 18.
She is 18. Mm. I said that and I thought she can't be 18. Anyway, she is 18. But it turned into a fantastic match, an absolutely fantastic match. And that's what I'll remember. You know, not many matches are brilliant level throughout. And this one took a while to get going. But once it did, it was such a glimpse into what could be, both for the rivalry and for Emma Raducanu. Great fight from Coco Gauff. Great defence from Coco Gauff. Those were the differences, I think. The defence in particular, the experience. Emma Raducanu had opportunities. There were a couple of moments where she perhaps picked the wrong shot. Those moments came when she had time on the ball. When she was just playing on instinct and opening up those shoulders, she was playing some US Open-esque tennis, I thought. But there were a couple of wobbles from her. But overall, I thought that match was good news for tennis and good news for Emma Raducanu. Perhaps not brilliant news for Coco Gauff forehand watch, I don't think, although she thinks the forehand was better than the backhand tonight. So maybe I just don't understand tennis at all, Matt.
Yeah, we were listening to that press conference in different places. I believe you were in the room. I was at my desk sort of tuning into it. And we both heard that line and immediately texted each other like, huh, what? Did we watch the same match that she was playing?
Because it was a very clear narrative in the match, wasn't it? Both of the, I mean, they're both on the backhand list. Both of
correct.
Them. You, my heart jumped when I saw that they were going for a backhand, and my heart was in my mouth when I saw that they were going for a forehand.
Right.
You know, it was that was such a clear narrative in the match for me. Whose backhand is going to be better and whose forehand is going to be worse?
Mm. Yeah. So I think you had a theory, and I think you may well be right, that she doesn't want to make a really, really big thing of the forehand.
I think she's
aware. She does get asked about it a lot.
She's aware of the talk around it, and she doesn't want to talk it into existence. She doesn't want to fuel that chatter, because I think she doesn't want it on her mind.
Mm, yeah. But yes, I really enjoyed this match as well. And I think the best thing I can say about it is, you know, there are some matches where there were
where there would be 80 unforced errors between the two players in two sets, and I wouldn't enjoy it. And yet, you know, even though there were those unforced errors, and we should recognise those, I still found it a really compelling match, and both players played their best tennis in the sort of biggest moments at the end of that second set. The last half an hour of that match was fantastic. Yeah. Couldn't take your eyes off it. And I loved Raducanu's really aggressive approach. I loved her perspective on this tournament, that just a couple of weeks ago when she turned her ankle in Auckland, she thought she might not even be able to play it, and she made a big effort to be able to play it. She took a risk that she might not for a different tournament.
She was on crutches.
Right, yeah. Mm. So that's been a success, really, to play this well so soon after that injury. And she did play well. And I also loved watching Coco Gauff compete like that. And right now, as you said, I think one of the biggest differences between them is that Gauff is a much better sort of scrapper in points and in rallies. She can rely on her defense to win more points. She can win slightly awkward points. She can fight. She can just figure it out a bit more. And I think sometimes Raducanu still maybe pulls the trigger at the wrong time, or does pull the trigger and overplays a little bit too much, or maybe doesn't quite have the court sense yet. Like, I think there was a lot of talk about that she maybe needed to come forward a little bit more in these rallies to sort of negate the Gauff defense, because the Gauff defense is so strong, you can't really hit through it. Maybe coming forward can help. But anyway, just those little subtle differences between them. But Raducanu had a set point in that second set and missed a drop shot, I think would probably be what you were referring to sort of that shot choice in the moment. I don't know. I think maybe just execution as well. Mm. She just missed it. It was very, very close. And it had a big occasion feel to it at the end of that second set. And I loved that.
Yeah, it did. It felt like... No, I'm not going to say it.
Does it begin with an R?
Yes, it did. I just think take away the US Open win. That's the anomaly. Take it away, and how would we all be looking at that performance? We'd say, gosh, she really showed her potential there. She showed what might be capable when she gets more experience and gets fitter and gets tougher and more match hardened, which is what happens if you do the right things off the court and train the right way. See Frances Tiafoe and everything, and she's clearly not afraid of hard work, I don't think. So I do back her to do those things. And I think that match overall was good news for the sport, absolutely. Now, with all due respect, Matt, to Christine Boucher of Spain, the following I don't think is good news for the sport. I'm just going to put that out there. Bianca Andreescu lost from match point up on the Kia Arena. This one really put our friendship to the test, because RIP Świątek against Andreescu in the third round. She took us to within one point of it and then whipped it away so cruelly. Look, Boucher was so good. So, you know, I watched the early stages of that match, which were utterly grim. It didn't get called onto court. This was scheduled first up on the Kia Arena. Didn't get called onto court until about 5 o'clock. They came out onto court, they had the warm-up, and then they're having a sit-down with wrapped in about three towels each, because it started drizzling just at the point that the match was due to get going. It was a vibe-free zone out there.
And Andreescu had been tweeting all day about how miserable these rain delays are and how much she wanted to be seeded, because that would, you know, probably meant that she was playing on a covered court. And it was grim. I mean, we went out and it was so cold.
We went out, sat down, wiped the drizzle off the off the seats, sat down, At this point, the players are just... It was midway through the first set. They played a couple of games, hadn't they? And again, it had started drizzling. So they were having a little sit down to see if the rain stopped. Classic tennis. And Matt just looked at me and said, "Dinner?" So 30 seconds later, we were gone. Look, Boucher really... She was not good in the early stages of this match, and I was thinking, goodness me, what a mismatch. This could be over quickly. It was all about Andreescu, you know, how quickly can Andreescu get this job done and get out of there? And she just stuck with it and got better with every game of the match. She just didn't miss, and she was making Andreescu feel like she had to go for more and more, and that resulted in more and more errors. I don't think she has the confidence yet to play that kind of extremely high risk tennis and pull it off. And I went to a press conference, Bianca Andreescu, and she was strikingly upbeat and philosophical in press, but then told us she'd cried for a full hour after the match. It was like she'd got it out of her system. She'd felt her feelings. You know, she's kind of a very modern person emotionally, I think, isn't she? Very in touch with her emotions. It felt like she'd felt her feelings, really sat in them, and then got to quite a philosophical place with them. But she did tell us that she went to bed last night not knowing the schedule wasn't out yet. She went to bed extremely late. She went to bed last night not knowing what time she would play today. Her coach agreed to stay up and wake her up in the morning if she was scheduled first on. So she got 3 hours sleep and a knock on the door at 7 a.m. saying, "You're playing in 4 hours, let's go."
Gosh, I'm just digesting that.
Mm.
Wow.
Now, and obviously that would have been the same for both players. She was not using it as an excuse, but that is pretty unreal for a... you know, a professional athlete to be in that situation, I think. I know they had extraordinary... Well, they had difficult circumstances yesterday. Difficult. But I suppose not extraordinary. You know, like rain happens, heat happens. We're in Melbourne. It's the most bizarre climate on the planet. I don't know. I have a lot of sympathy. I cannot imagine all the various moving parts that the schedulers are dealing with. But... I think athletes need to not be in that situation, really.
Yeah, and I've always thought that the rule was that if your match gets carried over, that you're second on the next day. But I think that's if you've already started.
Mm.
And I suppose she was in a situation where she could have been first or second on because she hadn't started. And that really provided a lot of uncertainty for her and other players as well, as you said.
But
I'm sure she wasn't
the
only one.
Because she was a second round match, and there were a lot of first round matches still to be scheduled today. I think she thought the likelihood was she'd be later in the day to prioritise the first rounds. But anyway, no one likes an unexpected 7 a.m. knock on the door. And look, it was good to see her still be positive and still say, "I feel like my tennis is there. It's just making it click. I've just got to keep doing the right things." And you know, she strikes me as somebody that has had a lot of therapy and is very well adjusted, and you know, I think she'll get there. I'm a believer.
That you are.
But Andreescu Świątek is not going to happen, and I am going to be mourning that for the next 48 hours. Świątek is going to happen though. She was a class apart today against Camila Osorio, who's a very talented player, easy on the eye, lovely to watch, didn't play badly, wasn't in the match at any stage.
Yeah, I mean, Świątek has reached that place, I think, where she can play well, you know, not great, not peak Świątek, and still put away a player of Osorio's quality pretty straightforwardly. And that's, you know, that's a quality that we've seen in true greats. You know, that's what they have, the ability to just separate themselves from the rest of the field. That's what she's done. I was really impressed the way she started Świątek, really fast start. Her footwork was really sharp and precise. She was getting her forehand into play. And she broke early in both sets. And she was asked after the match about that and, you know, how much of a plan that is to start sets quickly. And she just, you know, I said about the ominous line that Medvedev gave. She gave perhaps the most ominous line imaginable, saying that she wants to win every game. And of course, you know, of course all tennis players do. But with Świątek, you really do feel like she really means that and thinks that she can. Because we've seen her win, you know, so many 6-love sets, so many 6-1 sets. And she never lets up.
She's so, like, amenably ruthless, isn't she?
I know. She's so nice. And yet will destroy you if she gets the chance.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think Osorio broke back when Świątek was serving for the match in the second set, had a little rally. She's a nice player to watch, Osorio. But, you know, Świątek was way too good.
While that match was happening, over on the second court, Maria Sakkari was involved in an absolutely compelling tussle with somebody that you've probably never heard of. I hadn't heard of her before today. Diana Schneider, I think is the correct pronunciation. Russian player, 18-year-old, scheduled to go to college this year and play a college season, play the 2022-23 college season for North Carolina. She is some player, is Diana Schneider. I was so taken with her and very taken with what Sakkari had to do to fight past her today. She had a battle on her hands, and a little bit like Coco Gauff, I think the experience and the physicality, the sort of feeling of, I'll just hang in there and I'll trust myself and that will all pay dividends in the end. That got her through because, you know, tennis-wise, Schneider was absolutely a match for her and more at stages today. It also, as well as brilliant tennis and great battle, had aggro this match.
It did.
Maria Sakkari got extremely eggy about something I'm not sure.
Yeah, I didn't see where she was coming from, to be honest.
She was annoyed about Diana Schneider's celebrations, her fist pumping, her exclamation. She thought it was directed towards her. She said to the umpire, if she screams one more time in my face, I'm going to call the referee. And the umpire sort of very gently said, I don't think it's directed at you. She said, I don't think it's personal. And I agree with the umpire. I don't think it was personal.
No.
But it obviously felt it to Maria Sakkari in the moment.
I think it was just, as you said, the moment, the stress getting to her a bit.
Although she was given the opportunity to sort of back away from it afterwards. And she did double down. She said, it's not appropriate.
Such an empty threat, though, isn't it, calling the referee? Because the umpire's always like, okay, then.
Yeah, fine.
They're on my team. Like, you're essentially bringing out another one of me to just tell you what I've already told you. I always find it funny when they threaten to bring out the referee. But, Schneider was a joy. It's one of the great Grand Slam or first week of a Slam moments, actually, when you do discover a player, you know, and you think, wow, she can really play. And she can. She's a lefty. She wears a bandana. I
browsed bandanas today, Matt. I thought, well, that looks like a really practical sort of hair sweat solution.
And I love players with individuality. And, you know, she will stand out. We will remember her for her and for her game. She's got a huge hit on the ball. I mean, as I said, lefty really strikes the forehand well in particular and rocked Sakkari a lot with her power today. She also crouches extremely low, sort of Kerber style.
So strong.
So strong.
For 18 years old, incredibly strong.
Yeah, so really hopeful of seeing a lot more of her. And Sakkari, she did well. She really did do well because she was struggling there, and she got a lead in the third set after, you know, it looked like she sort of had slightly worn Schneider down physically, and she got a lead, and
she got a lead, and I said, "Oh, I'm really worried about
her now." Oh no, what have you done, Maria? Like, don't, this is not you. And of course, Schneider, you know, did get it back, and really, I think, got to love 30 as Sakkari was serving out the match, and we were very, very edgy. It was that. What's the Taylor Swift line where the sort of, what is it? The skeletons in her closet were sort of close to fucking it up for Sakkari. You know, when she's when she's serving out the match, we're all thinking, "Oh God, but you're not a closer." And I thought she did really well to then close it, because she had an opponent swinging and threatening and just generally, you know, being a bit of a nightmare down the other end. But Sakkari did do well to close it out.
I was so taken with Dana Schneider. I did a little bit of reading and Googling. They'd mentioned in the commentary that she was scheduled to go to college, and Maria Sakkari said in her on-court interview, maybe she should consider not going to college. You know, Sakkari very, very taken with her play as well. And from the Fox Sports Australia website, I found out that there's quite an interesting situation that Schneider finds herself in now. She's quoted as saying that it was one of her mother's friends that told them about North Carolina State and a potential opening for her there, and she committed to play the 2022-23 college season for them. She said, "Right now the situation is really bad for me and for Russians to travel. So we made the decision that it would be the right time to come here being North Carolina. But under the NCAA, the US college system rules, she cannot compete in the college system while earning prize money as a professional player. And that means if she decides to go through with her college plans, and as I say, she is committed, she would have to give up her Australian Open prize money of $158,850.
Which is career changing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Really interesting situation.
Yeah, one to follow. You know, what will she decide?
Oh, I'm all in on the career of Diana Schneider.
Yeah.
Jessica Pegula today had her first little wobble of the tournament against Alexandra Sasnovich. Nothing big, but it's been so plain sailing. You know, it's been sort of start the clock when she comes out on court. How quickly can she get this done? And she looked to be cruising once again, but ended up in a second set tiebreak and found herself, recentered herself just in time. But I don't know. I don't know whether it means anything, but, you know, it was a tiny chink. If you're an opponent walking out against Jessica Pegula, it's that tiny little chink to give you hope, I suppose.
Yeah, it's sort of, we raised an eyebrow a bit, didn't we, watching that. She was twice up a break in the second set, gave it away both times. As you said, ended up in a tie break. It was just a bit flat, I thought. It was a bit of a flat performance. Never really felt like she was in any danger. I always thought she would win. I always thought she would win in straight sets. So, you know, certainly not any alarm bells ringing. And actually, she was pleased with how she played. You know, she really thought that she played well and was pretty happy with her game. It's an interesting place she's in as a true contender, I think, for the first time.
You know,
I know she's gone up the rankings a lot, but this is the first time
truly been in the mix.
I think for me, absolutely.
Yeah, for me too.
It was the win over Świątek changed that. You know, a big win in that fashion. So close to a slam, and she's one of the best players in the world anyway, it made me think, right, this is potentially her time, and conditions seem to suit her. So, and she's so self-aware, Jessica Pegula. There was that funny thing that went round on Twitter the other day where someone tweeted that she was playing as though they're going to raise the inheritance tax in the US.
I didn't see that.
And
it's funny.
And she replied to it, you know, and you know, she's self-aware, and she will be, I'm sure, having these sorts of thoughts about being a contender for the first time, and what that means and will it affect her. And I don't think it is affecting her because, as we said, she's won her first two matches in straight sets. She's looking great. It's just that by the very, very high standards she set herself, that second set wasn't quite at the same level. Mm. And I do think she's got a slightly tricky draw now because she plays Marta Kostyuk, who does appear to be playing extremely well, likes it here, is a great athlete. And then after that, there's potentially Barbora Krejcikova in the fourth round. So a couple of tricky matches ahead potentially for Pegula, where we'll get a real sense of her level, I think.
She's wearing a number 3 on her skirt. I realised today it was pointed out in tribute to Buffalo Bills player Damar Hamlin that suffered cardiac arrest on the field a couple of weeks ago. Has incredibly now been discharged from hospital and is recovering well. But yeah, that's a very nice gesture. See, I know about these things now, Matt.
Mm. You do.
As you said, Krejcikova won today. Marta Kostyuk won today. Yelena Ostapenko. Donna Vekic finally won and has to come back again tomorrow for her troubles. Penny for Pam's thoughts about coaching.
Well, I think we know Pam's thoughts.
I think we definitely do, yeah.
We won't share them.
No, she's no regrets.
No regrets.
No regrets, but...
She loves it. She loves being involved. Yeah, and I love
how much she loves it. It's brilliant. Marketa Vondrousova won today and now plays on Jabeur. Yes, please. Madison Keys won. And Elena Rybakina won. Quick mention of her because she's flying under the radar by design because she's not being put in the spotlight at any stage. And these conditions, these balls, potentially suit her down to the ground.
I think big time. Flat hitter. Hello, Elena Rybakina.
She's Matt's dark horse, I think.
Can a Wimbledon champion be a dark horse? I know what you mean. It feels like she is, but it's so odd. I mean, she really should be talked about, I think, amongst the biggest contenders.
This is
here.
A real example to me, or a real highlighting of how much scheduling matters. Because we haven't been talking about her. She's the Wimbledon champion, and the conditions suit her. She's playing really well, and we haven't talked about her. And had she been on Rod Laver Arena or the second court, we would have mentioned. She wouldn't be leading the show, but we would have talked about her.
Yeah,
we would have mentioned it. It matters.
You're right. Yeah, absolutely. She was awesome. She beat Kaya Juvan, who I think we both think's a good player. Mm. She absolutely destroyed her. Every time I was looking up at the screen, she was just in control. Dominating, conditions suit her, and I think we're gradually getting a picture of what those conditions are and what the sort of players are that suit it, and she just seems to fit the mold. And she's won a Grand Slam title already, so contender.
Yeah, agreed, contender, and we will make note to talk about her as such. Final result, I think, to get in, Petra Kvitova lost today, Daria Kazatkina lost today, she's the highest seed to tumble so far. Cameron Norrie has won.
Hooray!
Hooray.
And David is released.
David is finally released from mad genius prison. As is Cameron Norrie. He's won. Hubert Hurkacz has won. Tennis is finally finished for the day. Very, very quickly, what do we have to look forward to tomorrow on day 4 of the Australian Open? A lot of players doing double duty because of how mad the last couple of days have been. Rod Laver is Sabalenka against Shelby Rogers. Jensen Brooksby and Casper Ruud second up, and then Leila Fernandez against Caroline Garcia, women's match of the day, that for me. Djokovic first in the night session, and then Vondrosova-Jabeur, also a yes please. Big news on the second court is that Andy Murray against Thanasi Kokkinakis is last up over there. That's very good for a British audience. That'll be on sort of mid to late morning, so get out of whatever meetings you've got in your calendar. Taylor Fritz against Alexei Popperin, good match on the John Cain Arena. Doubles gets underway tomorrow. Rublev, Ruusuvuori, Shardy Evans. What else have we got? Vekic. Let's end on Vekic again. Pam Shriver watch. Hello, Pam. Donna Vekic is against Ludmila Samsonova, the 18th seed.
Good match.
They are third on court three. So if you want to see Pam in her Australian Open hat, we love it. Tune into court three tomorrow. That is it, I think, for day three. We'll be back tomorrow with David, of course. And we'll be bringing you the best of all the action. We will have Cordelia, our lovely, lovely Australian Open mascot. We will have our mascots. I've got Xenia. We got points today, Xenia. Not many of them, but it's good to be on the board. Matt's had two failures in one day. Darwin.
Yeah, really bad day. For Darwin. Really bad. Max Purcell had, I think, seven set points to take it to a fifth. Didn't convert any of them. Lost to Emil Ruusuvuori. And then I had Zheng Qin Wen. Maybe a result that we should mention.
You're right.
She's gone out to Bernarda Pera. So Pera now plays Goff.
Not quite happening yet for Zheng Qin Wen, is it? I still think it will. She's incredibly young. She's incredibly talented. But just, you know, just a reminder, if there needed to be one, that just because you're sort of anointed, you know, it's not simple. It's not, nothing's a given. And it doesn't necessarily mean you're doing anything wrong. It's just tennis is unbelievably hard and there are so many unbelievably good players. Let's give a shout out to Maisie on David's behalf. Let's be magnanimous.
Absolutely.
Hello to Maisie. Billie Jean King is sponsored by... Billie Jean is sponsored, easily done. Billie Jean is sponsored by Billie Jean King and Alana Kloss. We have our executive producers and top folks, Drew, Hannah and Jamie. Thank you to them. I think that's it. We're going to save shout-outs when we have David here, because who would want a David Law free shout-out? Absolutely nobody. So we will see you tomorrow with David. Enjoy the tennis. Goodbye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.